Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to Get It Off Your Breasts, the podcast that digs into the issues that get really under your skin.
With no filters.
I'm Emma Gannon.
And I'm Leanna Bird. And this week we're delighted to be joined by our very first guest, chef and writer Gizzy Erskine, as we get to the nitty gritty of clean eating, influencers and the psychology of infidelity. But before we get to that, we wanted to say thank you so much for listening in to our very first episode of this brand new podcast. One of the reasons we really wanted to do this podcast was that, Emma, you and I met about a year ago at an event and we hit it off straight away and we really wanted to work together. But we also felt that there was a bit of a gap out there, didn't we?
Yeah, we felt like some of the kind of standard TV panel shows that you see out there at the moment are quite focused on stereotypical women's issues, and we felt like we wanted to broaden the horizons of that conversation.
Yeah, so in a way, what we wanted to do was create a kind of female-led roundtable discussion, but not necessarily focusing on women's issues. Obviously, we will focus sometimes on issues that affect women and bring a feminine point of view to the table, but women are capable of discussing absolutely anything in the world, whether it be science studies, to social issues, to politics, to fashion. You know, everything's on the table, there's no holds barred here, and each of our guests is going to be bringing their unique point of view and something that they want to get off their breasts each and every week, as will Emma and I.
Definitely. So strap yourselves in, because we talk about lots of things that will contradict each other. We're very honest. Nothing is off the table. And we hope you enjoy our very first guest.
Hi, Gizzy.
Hi.
Thanks so much for being our first guest.
It's an honour.
I was saying to Emma, part of the reason that we really wanted you to be our first guest, other than the fact that you're really incredibly interesting, was that you and I last week ended up having an evening. We had a barbecue. And then we ended up just staying up chatting till like 2 a.m. and we couldn't stop. And it was one of those nights, you know, when you're like, we have to go to bed now.
Yeah.
But just say one more thing.
Totally. It was funny. It's like we were getting more and more relaxed as the sort of night went on. Like, start off, like the coat comes off, and then you're like, we're going to put on our jammies, and then suddenly the bras come off, and so you're like,
we're both like half asleep.
Yeah.
And just going, still talking.
So it's like an old school sleepover when you're like,
it actually really was.
Close
it
our
really
eyes
was.
Now.
So I texted Emma straight afterwards. I was like, Gizzy has to be our first guest. She's got so much to say.
Yes.
And on that note, so we've each brought something to get off our breasts this week. And Gizzy, as you're our guest, it would be rude not to invite you to go first. So what do you want to get off your breasts this week?
It's something I suppose I'm seeing gradually mutate from something which I was really irritated with, which was the evolution of clean eating, which has kind of gone into this now backlash of clean eating, which makes me just as angry, because there are so many people who were completely behind it who now, they're suddenly realising that it's completely uncool, that they're like, oh,
there's so many glossy
about
magazines who made it a thing, now are tearing it down.
Yeah, retracting all of those. Mm. And it's kind of like, I feel like I've always been there at the forefront of that, like saying, where's the science? Where's the science? Where's the science? Can we not just enjoy our food? You know, let's just think pragmatically about this. Why does like moderation have to be so boring? And what is it now? Like, we need to moderate our diets. But then there's still like in the same, you know, like you said, one magazine will be like totally taking it down, yet the next page it will be like getting this new bikini diet, which is completely extremist again. And it's like, oh, it's so annoying. Like, sorry, I'm gonna go on a rant, but like last week I watched this documentary which was called, oh god, I can't remember what it was about veganism, which for me is one of the key trends at the moment in food. And it's just so when in anything that's extremist, I suppose you're sitting on this, you're pushing like this idea to the max where like they're in this thing saying eggs are bad for you, they're actually one of the most dangerous foods you can eat, and I'm like, come on, you know, this is something that most people have been like, most cultures live off, you know, this is one of the most valuable proteins that we've got in our world, you know, And it's just like these dangerous statements. And I know, yeah, I sort of like posed to Netflix. I was just like, God, you know, if I wanted to go out there and see what the, you know, how the world was being affected by, you know, responsible farming and responsible moderate eating, would you do a documentary of that? And you're just like, nobody's interested because it's not
a headline.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because I think like actually it can almost go the other way, because when you start telling people that this is bad for you, this is bad for you, this is bad for you, it can actually make an unhealthy obsession with not eating, and it can develop real disorders with people. And I know, like, well, I was quite sick last year. I had an autoimmune condition, and I started to get obsessed with what I couldn't eat, and I started cutting out, and it made me more anxious. Mm-hmm. And actually, I then read a really interesting book by a woman who had a similar condition to me, and she was like, stop thinking about what you can't eat and thinking about what's good to eat, and just add those things in and forget about the rest. And it was such a healthier attitude.
And it's really important, and I think that's a key point. Like, nutrition begins in the stomach. With an unhealthy gut, we have an unhealthy mind. Now, what we need to do is like understand that most of your serotonin is actually built from your stomach, 90% in fact. And if we don't look after our mental health, as well as our gut health, both of those things go skew-whiff. You know, it's one of those cliched things that if you're anxious about eating certain things, you're more likely to hold on to these fats and stuff like that, because you're holding on to all this bad energy, actually. And you just look at so many different sort of spiritual cultures which tell you that, you know, you talk about chakras, and your stomach chakras are the ones which let your digestion work. And it's a very simple thing. The more anxious you are about these things, the more you consider them, actually, it doesn't matter. You could be eating like green juice and, you know, beans the whole day. It doesn't make any difference, actually. You're still going to be unhealthy because you've got an unhealthy mind.
That's so true. If I wanted to go somewhere and have like impartial advice, because this is my problem, I'm like, bloggers, the media, press releases that I get, some books maybe, like, where is there to go? Because there's someone called The Angry Chef.
He's amazing.
So do you think it's really positive with like people like yourself and with someone like him? It is just kind of taking a step back from it all.
It's very difficult because, you know, I overwhelmed that documentary. Shall I Google it? Because I want to find out what it's called.
Yeah, go
ahead. That documentary was actually allowed to be, that it was legal. So the fact, I mean, there are so many sweeping statements, but then there's scientific evidence to back it up. But then you could, you know, with enough, if you go out and you interview enough people to skew something for your own purpose, you are going to be able to get whatever you want out of it. I think it's frustrating. You know, I work very closely with nutritionist Rose Ferguson, and she's ex-supermodel. She's a beautiful woman. On paper, you might look at her and think, oh, is she another one of those, you know, healthy blogger things? But she's not. She's a Harley Street nutritionist. She's working with Ulster University to make like a new coding system. And, you know, this is somebody who has invested time, but somebody who shares the same values as me. She loves food, everything in moderation, to a point. Understanding the values of an independent person's, you know, like digestive system. Like, some people can't process cow's milk. They just can't. Some people can't process gluten. Of course they can't. Some people have a really high yeast, or we were talking about this the other day, or like not enough yeast in their stomachs, you know, which... You know, it's like looking at that individual. You can't self-diagnose. That is the problem. And unfortunately, a lot of people, one, don't want to know the truth. They like having it. It makes them feel special, being gluten intolerant or, you know, And even like, you know, the vegan thing for me is an interesting one, because I actually believe on an environmental level we should be eating more vegan food. You know, that is something which I feel very, very strongly about. But
everyone's talking about that cowspiracy. Like, literally every day I hear a mention of it. I haven't watched it yet.
No.
I
have watched it, and it's really interesting. But you've got to remember, we're in England. That's filmed in America, all right? And loads of these documentaries are filmed in America. You've got to remember that. We have totally different laws, agricultural ethics. We do live in a completely different way. We are far more transparent in this country as opposed to the States, where they do hide a lot of this stuff. You know, it is a different ruling saying that dairy farming and mass production of beef is a problem to the world. There is no getting away from it. That is a fact. So we should be And also, it's like being a meat eater. You need a responsibility. There is the other side of the, again, another side of the argument, where you're so blinkered about this, where you're like, you know, I'm just going to have, you know, that's the wrong word. I take that back. Where there is the education, there isn't the education where people think, they don't realise that that's the case, and they're just going to eat meat with, I mean, I eat meat 3 times a day. I'm from that background, bacon sandwich for breakfast, ham salad for lunch, and bolognese for dinner. That's kind of standard Erskine fodder, you know. But it doesn't, you've got to sort of educate yourself to why you're not eating these things anymore and what the value it's going to have on the environment. Now, I think we've evolved so much now that vegetarian food is delicious. We don't need to eat as much meat as we used to. You can eat seasonally, we can eat all these things. Mm. And it's actually much easier for us. What inherently we naturally are drawn towards is a different. I struggle to eat less meat, but I really want to for the environment. I'm never giving up my Sunday roast. I don't think me giving up my Sunday roast is going to change the environment that much. And I can guarantee you having meat 3 times a week, 4 times a week makes you healthier. Yeah. I can promise you, I'm not saying veganism isn't healthy, but I spoke to my doctor the other day about this, and she was saying, and this is a holistic doctor as well, she's a medical practitioner who has a very holistic attitude to health, and she said, she was just like, absolutely, veganism is not the healthiest diet in the world.
I think it's all about being conscious though, isn't it? So yeah. It's about making informed choices, and absolutely. It's like you said, everyone's individual, so there's no hard and fast rule for everyone, and also it is impossible to know what to listen to. And even, you know, you were talking about this documentary and you were saying, well, there is scientific evidence to back it up, but the whole point of scientific evidence is it's there to be then refuted later on because exactly. New evidence comes. And look at the fact, like, we were told so long not to eat fat, right? And then we were told, actually, no, it's sugar that's the bad thing, and that's going to kill you.
I've got all these books on my bookshelf.
And now fat's back in. Yep. Have lots of fat. So it's constantly changing, and no one knows, and we're constantly building on our knowledge. And all you can try and do is try and be a bit conscious, know where your food's coming from,
exactly.
Think about it, and then make those informed choices, and not just consume it mindlessly. Mm. I think that's the best way to try to approach it.
100%. I mean, I think, you know, this goes back to the whole point when we were talking about the clean eating argument. You know, back in the day, if you were to say something to me about clean eating before, but it's like 10 years ago, and I did Cook Yourself Thin, I would have said to eat clean foods. That would have been my statement.
So what do you mean? So just what do you mean by
pure
clean
food? So
do you mean no sugar as well and no meat?
No,
and
I mean things that you know where their heritage is. You could the traceable foods, right?
Right.
And if they have been processed, it's an understandable processing. So sugar, for example, or, you know, cheese, that all of these things are processed. You know, the second you make a smoothie, it's processed, just so you know. So, and that's a fact. That's the science. You know, that's the science behind all these things. So, you know, if you can, it's sort of like knowing that you're eating the best quality ingredients that you possibly can. And do you know what? I live in the real world. If I'm going to have a, you know, I'm one of the very famous newspapers busted me for having a McDonald's once. And I'm like, absolutely, you know, my morals for knowing where this food has come from are the problem on that. Health-wise, once or twice a year, I don't really give a damn. But you've got to, you know, it's, like you said, it's making that just informed decision about those things.
Also, I feel like people in this industry, like, it's nice to meet and hear from someone who is kind of relatable in a sense of, I don't think I can afford to eat, like, the most, like, organic, clean, like, I go into Whole Foods and I'm like, shop here all the time?
I go to Whole Foods spending £15 on 8 tomatoes and being like,
yeah,
but too embarrassed to say no.
So it's like a middle ground in that respect, sort of, a bit.
But also, I think, like, everyone's got different priorities and you have to pick your battles. So for you, for example, for me, like, you know, it might be that we're thinking about, like, affordability one week or 1 month or 1 year or whatever that may be. For someone else, they might have kids and they might be thinking purely about health because they want their kids to be really healthy. Mm. For someone else, it might be about kindness and they want to make sure that there was no suffering gone into their food. Other people, it's the environment. So it's just, again, like, you can't, it's down to the individual, and we shouldn't really judge each other on what those priorities are, because it's all...
The way I say it is, for your own situation, you do the best that you can and not feel guilty about it. Now, I mean, you know, I think in organic eating is a bit of a farce, to be honest, because of how, with pollination, it's just I'm not entirely convinced that eating organic vegetables is 100% feasible. But I think, you know, also, you know, it's like, it's speed growing. Those are the things where they lose nutrients officially. But you know what? If you're skint, I'd rather you had a tomato than had a $2.99, you know, burger from a local place, you know, that you, it's yeah. just, it's those things that you've just got to, if we mind boggle ourselves with all of that information, then it creates guilt.
It's so interesting that you say guilt. Mm. Like that's, why are those two words so sewn together, food and guilt? Like they are, aren't they?
Completely.
And also, I don't know whether you agree, but I feel like being a multifaceted woman as well, like women are made to feel so guilty all the time. Work, life, food, diet, like the way they look, relationships.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. You very, very rarely you see men obsessing in the same way about those things. But I also think that it's, yeah, I mean, maybe it isn't just inherently in how we've been programmed to be women. Or maybe it's just how, I don't know. I don't know. It is, I don't know.
Do you find like being in this industry, because you've been doing this for years, like you're very established in this industry, like, and a lot of people have kind of come in, started a blog, and maybe 2 years in, they're doing this stuff. Is it interesting to have seen the waves and how it's changing, how it changes back?
Yeah, and it's really positive. You know, I did Cook Yourself Thin 10 years ago now, and it was revolutionary at the time. You know, the idea was we were looking at how to, it was about diet actually, but it was like, you know, most people want to drop a dress size, they don't want to lose stones, so how can we all sort of be more conscious of how we're eating without actually doing anything hardcore to do it. I thought that was a really cool ideal, because it is deep down how we all think. Despite, you can be the coolest person in the world and say you don't give a shit about it, but I think most women at the back of their mind are always like fussing with that one dress size. So it was kind of, you know, how can I have my cake and eat, or how can I have chocolate cake, how can I have a curry, how can I do fish and chips? And it was kind of, you know, looking at these things with fresh eyes. Then fast forward to 10 years and there's this extreme movement of, you know, we're looking at a plate that's like a sundial of, you know, colourful things which actually have no flavour, but they're super healthy, in inverted commas, where there's no actual scientific evidence. It's not evidence, but it is actually not healthy, because there's not enough carbohydrate there's not enough protein, it's not balanced, you know. So if we were to take down a plate, it would be an unhealthy thing, despite having more vegetables to it, you know.
It is also complex.
It's so complex. My problem is, you know, the internet created things. Bloggers had this voice. Some of them are brilliant. I do believe the cream rose to the top with a lot of them. Unfortunately, a lot of these people were very, very young. It's sort of a thing for me where it's like, don't knock the player, knock the game, actually. A lot of these girls, you know, as they're growing up, they are becoming more educated, and they are working with people who do know. And now the legal teams are all on board, so they have to be careful. You know, it's the industry, like you said, it's the magazines, it's the publishers, it's the people who are giving them the voice, actually, not just the blogs, the actual exposing those to make them, you know, putting them in having a bigger voice, I suppose.
Yeah. But people like big headlines, don't they? They don't want to hear, you know, it may be that if you have blueberries once a week, that may potentially be slightly healthy for you. They want to hear, blueberries will make you young and live forever. Totally. And that's, you know, what people get excited about, and what you want to, you know, pick up a paper for.
I don't know how some of it's published when it's like, this can cure this rare disease. I'm like, seriously, this has been published?
Yeah, I mean, there was a huge, you're talking about the Angry Chef. He's brilliant. I mean, he was one of the first people I think I was probably one of the first people who came out against it publicly and was like, this is insane. He was always sort of in the background. So both of us, I mean, I actually wrote a piece for his book, actually. But, you know, and then suddenly the sort of world starts to move, and you've got, you know, Jack Monroe was very vocal about it, and, God, I can't remember her name. Terrible. She won Bake Off. Really sweet.
Nadia.
No, a while back. I don't think she won it, actually. Oh, God, I'm terrible. I don't watch television, so that's terrible. Ruby Tando.
Oh, yeah, Ruby. Yeah.
So she, you know, and then suddenly we've got loads of people talking about it. And it is now this movement, but I don't know. I feel like people, I don't know, like, it's unfortunately, you're talking about headlines. It's boring. The headlines, the reality of this is it's really boring. What? Eat better quality carbohydrates, but less of them. Eat better quality meat, but much less of it. Eat good oils, including fish oils. Eat double, if not triple, your micronutrient, you know, vegetable, fruit offering. Drink loads of water. I mean, that's not exciting, is it? It's just common sense.
That brings me on to my get off my breast point, which actually fits in with some of this stuff. So I was like quoted, interviewed, they used like a sentence in an article last weekend for Fabulous magazine, and every single magazine is trying to get quotes on like the influencer movement at the moment, because I like move in that world slightly, but I also don't want to be too much in it. And all of these articles are basically saying the bubble's gonna burst, everyone's milking it, everyone's just like saying yes to everything, trying to get as much money as possible. And last night I was at something, and it's not like throwing shade on it, but someone introduced themselves as an online influencer, and I couldn't make sense of what that actually is. I was like, what's behind that and what does that mean?
My management have said to me that they are going to, like, it was so brilliant because I've got a publicist as well. That sounds so ridiculous as a statement out loud anyway, but you do have, that's part of your management team, and if you're busy you need these people. But my manager was like, right, we're going to call you Giddy Erskine Chef, writer and influencer. I'm like, no. I'm like not of that generation, for one. What does it mean?
So they were asking me my opinion on it because I did a big partnership that came out this year. And so
well done.
Apparently that makes me an influencer now, because it means like my influence in the tech world. If I'm working with a brand, people have tweeted me saying, I'm going to buy this now. So that means I have an influence, apparently. But I didn't mean, I'm not doing what I do to be influential. I'm doing it because I love it, and that happens to
influence. It's part of your personality. But you can't, you must realise when you have a voice like yours, that people hold on to and latch on to, that you are influencing gazillions of young people. You must realise that. So although when it's being used as a marketing tool for yourself, it's odd. There is a sentiment that there is a huge value in what you say.
I agree. And I said in the interview, I said, I wouldn't introduce myself as one. Like, I went to an event recently and it was like a camping thing, and on the sign, on the tent, it was like Emma Gannon, and then in brackets, influencer. And I genuinely had a shiver down my spine of that's not what I do, because it sort of makes it like less worthy. But then I did say, in a massive company, like whatever, to use the term influencer marketing, like that makes sense in their corporation
within themselves,
and they need to use the word.
But it's like the difference between the label of influencer, which is one that perhaps if you put it on yourself or if someone else puts it on you, I don't know. I feel like it's almost like being given quite a lot of sort of responsibility as well. It's like saying you are now an influencer, watch what you say, almost as well, a little bit. And then on the other hand of it, it's like, well, you are influential because you have a voice and people listen to you, which I think is hugely flattering.
Yeah, I think it's because if you have a history of work, like for example with your writing and your cooking, you're then an influencer. But what I'm confused at is when someone hits 10,000 followers on Instagram for just putting up some pictures, and then they're calling themselves an influencer. I think that bubble is like a bit fragile.
It's really fragile, you know. I think it's a terrifying prospect that these people who have... Oh God, this is really... No, I'm not going to say it because it's too awkward. But like,
get it off your breast, because you go on.
I'm not sure, like, you know, I think it can be dangerous that some people are given a voice when... we're all allowed an opinion, of course. And everyone, God, it's this cliche thing. It's like, everyone's entitled to opinion. Of course they are. It doesn't mean that it's a stable, sensible, you know, safe opinion, you know. It's actually can be quite frightening what people's voices can do.
Donald Trump is literally an influencer. Like, he's a reality TV influencer. I remember when I was in San Francisco in the back of an Uber, like on that day, what was it, November the 8th, and I just said to the Uber driver, I was like, what do you think, like, you live here? And he was like, I enjoyed his show. What was it? The
Apprentice.
Oh, the Apprentice. My God. He was like, I think it's funny, but I don't want him to be the president.
Yeah, well, he's a caricature. He's a caricature. But I think also, I don't know. I feel like, I mean, I've not been called an influencer, so I maybe don't have the same experience of it. But I feel like if someone started to say that, it's almost like being called a role model, and then you feel like someone's setting you up a little bit for a fall, or saying that you have to watch yourself a bit what you say. And I remember Gizzy, like, recently you were posting a bit more political stuff than maybe you would normally people be used to seeing on your posts, and you got a bit of backlash from that, and it was actually you're a multifaceted woman and you have opinions on a whole variety of things. And I don't know, if someone starts sort of putting labels on you and saying, like, this is what you are, and now you've got all this amount of people listening to every word, it almost feels like, is that trying to limit you and what you're allowed to talk about?
I'm sorry to make this about me, but I've struggled with this being labeled as a chef. Or as we were saying, is it a food writer? Like, I stopped chefing officially, like, in restaurants about 10 years ago or so. But then I do pop-up restaurants about 2-3 times a year. I cook professionally. I work in takeovers, and I actually have more, you know, skills as a chef than a lot of people who call themselves chefs who don't actually cook in restaurants. There are 2 or 3 of the biggest TV chefs in the country who I don't believe have cooked in their restaurants for years. And I probably cook more than them. But I feel such utter guilt about calling myself a chef. Is that because I'm a woman? Probably. Mm. Is it because I'm not sure how to, you know, I know I'm multifaceted, so I don't know how to, like, I don't like being limited to being one thing. You know, same as a food writer. You know, I'm mainly a recipe writer, but I've written reviews before. I've written features about political stuff. Like, I mean, it's almost like, you know, back in the day, we always had to be inhibited by our label of what we called ourselves. Yeah. Now I'm lucky, you know.
That's exactly it, because we were saying, what do you say when you introduce yourself? And you were saying, I hate it.
You know, like, when you go to weddings, obviously, and you sit down on, like, a table or any kind of function like that where you have to sit around and meet new people. I literally, like, I get, like, a shiver thinking, like, I really someone to say, what do you do? No, but I just also just think, like, it's a really unimaginative question, and why does it matter? Like, we could go around the table and all label ourselves, but actually, like, can't we just have a conversation and see if we get on? Like,
I think at those things, it's like sometimes people are being genuinely, like, nice because they're like, what do you do? But at, you know, those networking events where people are like, I literally want to know what you do so I know how much time to spend talking to you.
But I think also, I find it an annoying question, to be honest. But also, I think that's partly because of me, because I don't have just one job. And so I find that I'm annoying if someone says to me, what do you do? And I have to basically go, well, I do this and this and this, but I've also done that and I've also done that. And if I don't say all of that, then I'm not being honest.
Yeah.
But by saying it all,
I then apologise for yourself.
Or then I'm being, like, a real show off and going, I just think, like,
I love the idea of wearing these different hats. Yeah. Can I tell you about when I met a really adorable Scottish lady who said she was a campaigner for HIV? No. And I got home and was like, oh, fuck, that was Annie Lennox.
No! Legend! That is fucking
God. Oh, like a house on fire. And then I got home and I was like,
oh my god,
okay, that's so right. That. She wasn't like, you know, she introduced herself in a way that felt
how she sees herself, her biggest value,
what her biggest success is, maybe. And but actually, that doesn't necessarily have to be her music. You're so right.
But is this indicative of, like, the whole way that we're going in terms of the way people are, like, seeing gender and sexuality and so much else as a spectrum now, and that the labels are being removed? Are we almost moving to that with, like, career and job titles that actually you don't need to say, like, this is who I am or what I am, because who I am is much more than that.
But then also, as a reverse of that, there was this thing, like, 2 or 3 years ago where you were, like, a model / DJ /
slasher.
I obviously, I've DJed since I was 14, so, like, I still have that string to my bow as well, but I never tell, you know, I did model for, like, five minutes when I was 15.
Yeah.
I don't put that on my bow, but it's like, you know, a lot of people do. They feel that it gives them some kind of one-upmanship to have the slash.
Yeah. Well, I am that.
Yeah.
But see, mine's like, much less, like, mine.
But you
much
could
less
go
rational.
And say, I work for, head up a charity, but maybe that's
just because I've been super lucky and we've actually all had quite, you know, amazingly interesting different careers, whereas maybe someone who is a doctor and, you know, has obviously done a variety of different things, maybe they wouldn't feel that was an annoying question to be asked. Yeah. Maybe they're just like, I'm a doctor, it's who I am. Maybe that's much more part of their identity. Yeah. Maybe only if you've lived a kind of life where you've changed a lot and done a lot of different things do you even think about that as being an issue.
I think as well that in this, like, self-promotion world, like, your Twitter bio and your Instagram bio, we're, like, in a bio world where it's so, like, true. What is your character?
Who are you? Yes. Who are you?
And so if you struggle with what that bio is, like, you could struggle with confidence.
Okay, what does your bio say, Gizzy?
Do we have a look?
Yeah.
Oh, God. So,
My one says,
okay, so my Instagram is chef and award-winning food writer, Wild Ocean Food Tube host, columnist, food, cats, music, 60s, time, with a space, man space, travel, and then my book.
I'm such a slasher! You're a slasher. You can just wipe that all off and write slasher.
That does say a lot about your identity outside of that as well. Mine says, oh, I don't know if this sounds wanky, now I'm reading it out loud. Like, I'm
maybe.
Like, so, a creative woman refusing to be pigeonholed. Write lots. Host Control Alt Delete podcast. Wrote a book. Have a blog. Did a TEDx in Microsoft's latest TV ad.
Nice.
Bosh.
Like it. I just was like, how do you fit that in to make sense? What's yours?
Mine just says speaks and spells.
I was like, yeah, the Radio X thing, this podcast, they've written. Then I just thought, I speak and I spell.
Yeah.
I write stuff and I say stuff. Yeah. And that's basically
I
it.
Love that.
So but also, it. And I like speaking spells as well.
But also, you're very concise, whereas I like waffle loads of shit. So it's kind of like, you're really good at summarising.
You are the first person in my entire life that's called me concise. I think I'm like the least succinct person in the world.
You can articulate yourself in like two sentences, whereas I will take me 4 years to get around to my point.
I love that. I think bios are hilarious. Like some of them, I think with some really, really, really famous celebrities, their bio is just like, all right.
Yeah, up your bum.
So I wanted to like just ask you, Emma, back to what you started on, which was this whole idea of someone saying you are now an influencer. Do you think that you'll ever be comfortable with that, or would you prefer not to be? And do you think that that bubble's going to burst, or do you think being an influencer is going to be the future job that people go, when I grow up, I want to be an influencer?
Oh, I think that's already happening.
There was that study actually that I think it was like 18 to 26 year olds said that they wanted to be a blogger over like footballer or pop star. You know, those like original goals is now.
But you know what? That's not so bad, because I remember, I think it was about 10 years ago, and they did a study and they asked, I think it was little girls in primary school, what they wanted to be when they grew up, and the number one was a footballer's wife. And so I think if you want to be a blogger, at least you're someone who wants to do something yourself, and not marry someone who does something. So yeah. That's more aspirational.
Do you get this as well? The amount of people who come to me are almost asking for the shortcuts to get there. Mm-hmm. It's like, I mean,
all
of us have got there because it's through lucky accident, you know, and hard graft, actually, and being talented. I'm sorry, I'm going to put myself out there as like, I'm better than...
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
People who haven't broken through, that's the truth. And there are lucky people who break through without that, but you know,
I think it's like we're in this culture where people just want things on a plate, and if they want it now, like we can get an Uber, we can get an Airbnb, we can order a pizza that can arrive in 5 minutes, so like where's our career?
But that's also because of things like shows like X Factor, there's reality shows which sell you a dream that you can become an overnight success. So I think that's
to answer your question quickly before we move on to your off your breasticles. So what you're saying, does it bother you? I think the only thing that worries me is that the more I call myself or act or introduce myself as an influencer, I think the irony is lost. There's an irony there, because I will become less influential. The more that I think...
It's like when you say you're cool. It's like you're not suddenly, the second you say you're cool, you're uncool.
No, exactly. I think that's the thing. Not calling yourself it, but if someone else calls it you that, that's fine.
Okay.
So what's yours?
Okay, so I'm really interested in relationships and the psychology of relationships and the difference between genders. I find it just ridiculously fascinating. And there was a study out about a couple of weeks ago that came from Cardiff Metropolitan University, which I found really surprising, and I wanted to get it off my breast and get your guys' thoughts on it. So basically what they did is they asked people, women and men, they asked them how they felt about their partners if they'd cheated on them. And what they found from the study was that men whose wives or partners cheated on them blamed their partners, not the men who they'd had the affair with. But if you switched it, women whose partners had strayed, whose husbands had strayed, so we're talking about heterosexual relationships here, blamed the other woman. And I just found that really interesting. And I wanted to, there was a second part to the study, which I'll come to in a minute, but I wanted to know whether that's your experiences as well, whether not just personally, but from friends or whatever as well. Do women blame other women, whereas men don't? Do women always get the blame? And if so, why do we think that is? Mm. And it's not fair, is it? Mm. Why do we always get the blame?
Brilliant question. Women's blame.
So I guess, I mean, I don't know. I wanted to ask you guys, like, how would you feel? Do you think that's right, what the study said? Do you think women do tend to blame other women?
Well, I read something from a presenter person who had written an article who said whose advice for young women was to have a happy marriage, because she's got a kind of publicly famous happy marriage. Girls, make sure that even if you're not in the mood, like, have sex with your husband, like, most nights, just to keep him happy.
That's my mum's advice as well.
And I, really? Part of me was like, I actually probably do that sometimes when I'm not really in the mood, but I get myself into the mood. Mm. So I'm like, sex is so important for closeness and relationships. But on the other side, why do I have to worry about him straying? That's me saying it's my fault if he does. Yeah.
I don't necessarily think it's you saying it's your fault. I think that there is it's almost a responsibility with sex. If we're going to go into that you actually... That it's quite easy to lose track of, and the second that you don't invest in that, it's, and I think it's really important to invest that time, like you said, for closeness and for, you know, I think the second, unfortunately, it's a very important part for me.
An old boss of mine used to schedule it into a diary.
But surely that goes both ways, though. That's not just for women, that's for men too.
Yeah.
So surely that advice is for men as well, and you know, that you just both in a relationship have to make time for each other.
Yeah, I agree, but it's very, I mean, the amount of times, like, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine recently, and she's like, just had a baby, they're both back at work, she's exhausted, she's like, we're not having sex, and you know, I still really fancy her, I just cannot be bothered. But it is the same thing, you know, I actually brought up that same sentiment, which was, if I, you know, if you don't have sex with them, they're going to find someone else to have sex with, and that for me is a terrifying thing. So you are right.
It's a libido thing of like, I have to get myself in the mood and like put in my diary, like, dinner tonight, like, woohoo, get involved. / a man is normally usually always on and ready,
whereas
they don't have to gear themselves up for it. Like, I shouldn't think of it as a chore, and I don't.
But also, the second the pressure's
there, I'm like, oh,
another thing to do.
But then I think that sets a really dangerous precedent, because I think that's saying to women that, like, if they're not in the mood, that's not necessarily okay, and that they owe it to their partner to give them sex. And actually, if you're not in the mood,
that's quite,
and then you're getting into a really dangerous territory.
Oh, it's so hard.
But also,
the truth is, if you don't, then it's a sort of a responsibility to the relationship. I don't know.
But that's an article that went viral. That was like, how to please your man, and it was like, give him a cold beer when he's got out the shower. And this was like 2016 article, they weren't being funny.
But this is, so what you guys were saying there, in a way, was almost, well, sounded to me a little bit like, so if you're in a relationship and the man strays, it's almost like saying, well, does the woman blame herself? But actually, what the study was saying is they blame the other woman. So it's the whole idea of, like, you know, women blaming women for stealing their man or for, like, leading them astray. And, like, why are men let off the hook in that way? Like, why does that happen? Why do we think, you know... I mean, obviously, you would be angry at your partner. I mean, let's never happened. if your partner strayed, would you be more angry at him, or would you be more angry at the other woman?
Him, definitely, from me.
I mean, 100% him, because I don't care about the other woman. You know those, like, rom-coms where the women befriend each other and text each other being like, outing him, and then they both like gang up on him, and like I can imagine doing that. I can imagine befriending the other woman. I would be like, God, what's going on? He's a shit.
Yeah.
But then in a career context, historically, women still think there's only one woman for the job, and so they always blame the woman for taking their thing.
And do you think also because women have an expectation that other women, that there should be some kind of a sisterhood or a support or an understanding that, you know, this is your partner, that you found your person, and, you know, women have it not always easy in life, and that how could you do that to another woman?
I don't know. Like, I feel as I've, this is really bleak, but as I've got older, I feel like I have my friends, and my friends, the women that I'm close to, and men, you know, like, but I don't feel like you have inherent trust from anybody. Mm. Like, I feel like if I wanted support from, if I was going through a break, I wanted support from my male friends within that situation. I think people just look after themselves. That's the fact, you know. And I think you can, as much as you can be good and kind and thoughtful and considerate and be the best human you possibly can be, you know, I think that they're, most of the time, if people want to justify something to themselves, they will. I don't know if it's acceptable with regards to blame. Sorry, just to go back, because there's one thing I was thinking. That there are women... there was a thing about breakups and about how people who able to just... they'd be able to get through their breakup more if somebody's cheated on them. Because they have someone to blame. Mm. So I wonder if it's the ability to blame someone, because we do live in this blame culture. Right. And actually, if somebody broke up with you and was just like, you know what, I'm just not feeling it anymore. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's not you, it's me. That's harder to deal with than they've cheated and they've been a dick.
Because then you could blame, especially, you know, as a woman, you could say, well, it wasn't my fault, I didn't do anything wrong, but this other woman came in and she ruined our lives.
Maybe it's kind of justifying it in your head, like, it wasn't working. And maybe that's why.
And it's interesting because both of you seem to say there that actually you'd be more pissed off with the with your partner. And I for me, that makes sense because the partner's the one that has the responsibility and the trust for you.
Maybe but you then, don't want to believe that you're, that the husband or the partner is that bad, so you want to blame
to take them back.
That's true. But I think then, we definitely as women, we look on for the positives and
but then I do
men
think
when they don't deserve it a lot of the time.
But I do think if we look at the media and the public reaction when you have these very public affairs or breakups, I do think the women get painted in a totally different light. And I think often, you know, you'll be seen as marriage wrecker, and you see it a lot, you know, the whole people talk about the strictly ballroom is it
calm dancing
the curse, and it's, you know, it's the you know, she's a marriage wrecker. And I don't think guys get that same kind of slack. If a woman leaves her husband for the guy, then the woman is seen as, how could she leave her husband and children, this awful woman. And if a guy leaves the wife, it's, how could this woman steal another woman's husband and child. So I do think the media does, and the public do tend to kind of almost back up this study and what they seem to find, even though we seem to know. Do you want to hear what the explanation from the scientists was?
Yeah, go.
So they said that they thought it could be because of, well, evolutionary, because of our caveman past. I'm not sure I would totally agree with this, but let's see what you think. And they said one explanation may be that women, because they are the choosier sex and bring up the children, are therefore seen as the most important sex for childbearing. This is why they may be blamed for a relationship breaking down by men or women, whether they are inside or outside of that relationship.
So that's essentially, is that sort of, in a long and short of it, saying women should appreciate the sisterhood and therefore they don't? Like, is that, I don't know.
Well,
like,
I think it's saying that because we evolutionary are the ones who will childbear and therefore are finding ultimately, you know, we're looking for, originally for a mate to have these children, we're the more important role in that family, to keep the family together. So if we break it, it's seen as more like sacrilegious, like how can a woman walk away from her responsibility as a wife and mother? Whereas guys, it's seen as, well, that's what they are, they're they're spreading their sperm, it's natural.
It's another example of like, you can't win, you can't lose, and then the men win. Well, you know the second part of that study?
So this was another part of it which was really interesting as well. So they got there was 21 men and 23 women, and they got them to look at like fake messages on Facebook which detailed like different kinds of cheating relationships. So basically they read messages that their partner was receiving from some random, and then they asked them to like rate how distressing they found it from 1 to 10. And the kinds of things they did were basically either messages which were suggesting a very emotional connection with the partner but no sex. So the example of that was, you must be my soulmate, feel so bloody connected to you even though we haven't slept together. So no physical relationship there, but an emotional connection. And then the other side of that was messages which intimated that there was some sexy times going on, but not really anything else. So you must be the best one night stand I've ever had. And the men were really upset by the one night stand, the sexual messages. That's, they felt really distressed, really betrayed, really hurt. The woman, not so much. They were like, well, whatever. So, you know, so obviously distressing, but much more distressed by their partners having an emotional connection.
I get that. I sort of get that. I think it's like how, but then I guess it's like how romantic you are, how invested you are. I don't know. Like, I...
No, it is a really tough one, because I remember when I was at university, my then boyfriend, when I was like 19, snogged someone else on the dance floor. And I was like, I didn't really care. Like, you had a gross snog with someone else, but you were really drunk. And I like was actually all right with it. I wouldn't allow that now. But that's because I'm like, I feel like I'm in a more very, very different relationship where I actually know what things are now. But the emotional texting thing would be... I would feel really cheated by that.
But again, I think that could, you know, you can look at it in that kind of caveman mentality as well, of like,
women who are ultimately, you know, are going to be the child bearers are trying to, I don't want them, their caveman to go off and find another family to raise, right? So they want that emotional connection. Whereas,
so it's less threatening if someone just has a one-night stand and doesn't tell you about it,
yeah,
than whereas, someone who might go and leave and be like,
whereas for a man, right, if you think about it, again, looking at evolution, for a man, you never know 100% really that the child is yours, right? You're with a woman, you have to trust that this child is yours. So what's the greatest threat? That your partner is having someone other man's child and that you're raising that child. But you know, then you have to look at like the whole of like jealousy, like what is the point of jealousy? Like why are we as human beings even involved to feel jealous? And it's not just us, animals can feel jealousy too. Like there is obviously, dogs can.
You've got more food than me.
But you know, there was a really cool study with dogs. And they showed that the dogs got jealous of like a fake toy dog when their owner was playing with it, and they got really upset. And it was like, obviously, like there is a reason, like an evolutionary reason that dogs and human beings have this kind of jealousy, and it must be to somehow keep our species going. I don't know.
I also think it's a really useful emotion. Like if I get jealous of something, and that's my problem, it's nothing that anyone else has done, and I'm like, why am I jealous? Oh, I want that.
Yeah.
Why don't I try and make steps to go and get that?
Yeah.
Rather than just sitting there being jealous. It's such a gross emotion, isn't it?
It's funny, like, I don't, it's funny when we look at sort of different emotional things. We were talking about this the other day, like, where you actually, like, I don't feel jealousy. It's really strange. I don't know if that's sort of like a sociopathic thing. Like, oh, you know, some people don't feel empathy. You know, some people, you know,
that's so nice. I have a really odd... So it must be freeing not to...
It is, but people don't understand it. So if I'm in a relationship, that is a problem. You know, people want you to feel like that. I mean, I'm very impassioned and I'm very righteous and I can, you know, I'm a huge romantic, like scary, like not scary, but like, you know, a very, very intense romantic. But I don't feel, I sort of have a very pragmatic approach to jealousy. Like if you're going to cheat on me, you're going to cheat on me. And hopefully you know the consequences of that. And I don't know why, I've just never felt it. I've had very jealous boyfriends.
I think that's nice not to be like, I think jealousy, you know, if you look at it at its most extreme, can tip over into...
Like that play, Othello.
Yeah.
Or yes, that play.
That play by that writer. Yeah. It can tip over into like, I think it's like the number one reason that people give for domestic abuse.
Mm.
And so it can be a really dangerous thing. So actually, I think your approach is really healthy.
Mm.
And it's like, if someone's going to do something, you're being jealous isn't going to stop them, and actually it's probably going to push them more to it by being paranoid and freaking out about it, and there's nothing you can do.
There's nothing you can do. Out of your control.
Yeah, that's so true.
Yeah, and it's like, if they're going to do it, you know, go to town. I hope that I recognise it, and I hope you realise if you're busted, you're out.
Yeah.
Or, you know, we'll be in a pragmatic, I'll be able to pragmatise that in a different way on the knowledge of it. But
how do you feel about just getting, like, would you ever read anyone else's messages?
Yes, all the time.
Yeah.
Just because I'm nosy, though.
Because I used to, with my ex-boyfriend, just want to know where I stand. When he was in the shower, I used to have a little look. And I feel, I can't believe I did that now.
Oh, I absolutely would.
Like, a bit of snooping.
Just,
you know,
a bit.
I'll tell you something, right? So when I was young, obviously we didn't really have mobile phones, but when I became a teenager, I used to just, like, pure nosiness. This is really weird. I'm going to sound like such a freak, but I used to read my dad's phone just because I was just like, I didn't have a mobile phone, and I was like, I'm just going to read my dad's messages. Like, and they were really boring. Yeah. Like, they were literally, he barely knew how to send text messages.
Yeah.
It was like things like call home, but I just used to do it. And I do think that's a massive invasion of privacy.
What about that thing? There's always that statement of, you know, I've had it before. It's like, well, oh, you've been busted. I read your text message. And it's like, you shouldn't have, like, read my text message, invasion of privacy. I'm like, yeah, but you've been busted.
Yeah.
You know, who's worse? The person who's been a dick, frankly, than the person who's invaded the privacy. I'm sorry.
Also, if you've got nothing to hide.
Yeah, quite.
Because I did a surprise party for my boyfriend a few years ago, and it all went really, really well. And his friend Tim was in on it, and, like, sent him to the pub, came back, surprise. And the year later, he admitted he'd accidentally seen on my laptop. So the whole thing was not a surprise.
But, do you know,
so some things need to be, like,
but you know what? It always comes from a place of insecurity, these things. But I had a boyfriend when I was about 18, and we were together for like 3 years, and I thought we had a really great relationship. And we went on a big holiday with a load of our mates when we finished school. There was about 40 of us. So basically all our friends were there. And it emerged during the trip that every single person on that trip knew that he was just cheating on me left, right, and centre throughout the holiday, apart from me. And I think I was obviously really upset, and, you know, we're great friends now and it's completely fine now, but at the time I was really upset. But
I was upset obviously that he cheated, but I think I was more upset by the humiliation that everyone knew.
Yeah, yeah.
And that lack of knowing made me want to be someone who reads messages because it made me feel like as long as you
I'd rather know.
Yeah, and it's like that feeling of lack of control. And I know you, and obviously,
well, it's gotta be humiliation.
Yeah,
so I can feel humiliation rather than jealousy. Like, if you're like that, for me, is a horrible.
But then I think,
what if you knew your friend's being cheated on? Would you tell them?
Well, I've had that situation and it blew up in my face. I told them about 4 years afterwards when they were still together because I saw it was getting serious. We were really young when I found out, and she was really upset with me and didn't speak to me for nearly a year because I hadn't told her for so long. But yeah, and so I now would always tell that person. Yeah. But I just wanted to say with the text reading thing that you were saying there, I think it's justified like at the beginning, and then I think as that person proves their trust to you, like they might not know they're proving their trust to you because they're unaware that you're checking their message. But I think like that insecurity is okay. Like you have that like lack of trust, but as your relationship builds and grows, you know, you shouldn't keep doing that unhealthy behavior. Yes. You should learn to trust. But yeah, no, I would tell
on your marriage vows. Yeah. I vow to not read your phone.
Would you tell a friend?
I'm of the mind that it's like not my business, which I think is very helpful.
Here's a good happy medium. This is what I do. I tell the person who is cheating to tell that person. Mm. If not, I would tell them.
Oh, that's what I did. Yes. That's what I
like
did.
That. Yeah.
Can I just say that is what I did?
But also, and he's and he. Friend, does, if yeah. it's my best friend, like my friend that I've known since I was two, we're like sisters. That, if it's a friend that like,
I still think it's correct to let that person resolve that thing for themselves, and then if they've done it, just be like, you know, I told them. No, that sounds good.
Take the credit. Thanks, guys. I did try and do that, and the guy convinced me that he was just going to stop, and then it happened again, and that's why I ended up dragging it for so long. But you know, you live and learn.
Yeah.
I don't know about you guys. I feel much better.
Me too.
Do you feel like you've got a lot off your breast, girls?
I absolutely do. I have my bra.
I have to say, this is possibly my favourite thing about today is that. Before we started Get It Off Your Breasts, you actually took your bra off off your breasts, and I think we should start every podcast from now on by all just removing your bras.
Honestly, I feel great for that.
My shoulders are like dropped. I'm way more relaxed. So I hope that's therapeutic to listen to you as much as it was for us.
Thank you so much.
Oh my god, that was such good fun. I kind of want to do this every week with you.
Well, thank you so much to Gizzy. I hope you enjoyed listening to our very first episode of Get It Off Your Breasts as much as we enjoyed making
that. I loved it. It's like therapy.
I can't wait to see what Dawno Porter brings to the table next week and what she wants to get off her breasts, because she is going to be our very special guest. So please make sure you're listening in next week. If you can, in fact, click subscribe wherever you're listening to, and then you'll never miss an episode of Get It Off Your Breasts.
Yes, and while you're there, please rate and review us. We really appreciate it. It just means other people can listen, and we can make this into a brilliant community of people. So, yes, hope you enjoyed it.
And thank you once again for listening. We'll see you next week with Dawno Porter.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Bye.